It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Nigeria's leader refuses a prisoner for kidnapped girls swap and will not negotiate with a Boko Haram. And in the Ukraine, an update, I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan is rejecting a Boko Haram demand of militant prisoners in exchange for more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped by the Islamist group a month ago in northern Nigeria. After a meeting Wednesday in Abuja, Britain's Minister for Africa, Mark Simmons, said Mr. Jonathan made it clear there would be no negotiations with Boko Haram that involved a swap for the abducted girls. Earlier, villagers in Borno, the province where the girls were kidnapped, reportedly fought off an attack by suspected Boko Haram militants. Nigeria's Daily Trust newspaper quotes state legislators as saying about 200 militants were killed and several captured. Vigilante groups are forming across northern Nigeria to combat Boko Haram. A South Africa judge has ordered runner Oscar Pistorius to undergo psychiatric tests, bringing a stop to his trial on charges he murdered his girlfriend at his home a year ago. The judge announced the ruling Wednesday following testimony this week from a defense witness, a forensic psychiatrist who said Pistorius had an anxiety disorder that causes fear and worry.
Her focus was on her diagnosis and her findings that the accused suffered from a generalized anxiety disorder, which may have affected his conduct on the 14th February 2013. She repeated this under oath. To fully understand the significance of Dr. Foster's evidence, it is necessary to focus on extracts which I think are of some relevance.
The prosecutor requested the test, saying he did not want Pistorius to use the condition as a basis for a possible appeal later on. The judge said the test will make sure that Pistorius gets a fair trial and may be evaluated on an outpatient basis. Pistorius says he thought he was shooting at a nighttime intruder when he killed Rivas Steenkamp. If convicted, he faces life in prison. Thai authorities say at least two people have been killed in explosions and an overnight shooting attack on anti-government demonstrators in Bangkok. Officials at the Emergency Services Center in the capital say 21 other people were also wounded in the assault early Thursday. The attacks bring the death toll in the Thai political turmoil to at least 27, with more than 800 wounded since November. Fears have intensified that the nation's political deadlock could spiral into street fighting after the Constitutional Court removed Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawat on charges of abuse of power. Her supporters are vowing to defend her government, which has limped on in spite of her removal from office. Ukraine launched talks on Wednesday on national unity without the participation of pro-Russian separatists who are seeking autonomy from Kiev in the country's east and southeast. In opening remarks, Interim President Oleksandr Turchynov said his government is ready for dialogue. But he also insisted that Kiev will not talk to the pro-Russian gunmen who have seized buildings and government troops were killing them near the Russian border. Separatists who declared sovereignty in two eastern regions this week dismissed the Kiev talks. More than 230 people are confirmed dead in a mine collapse in southwest Turkey. Hundreds more are believed trapped deep inside the mine. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
In the southwestern town of Somma, relatives and friends are continuing to wait for news outside the disaster-stricken mine. But hope is fading for the up to 200 trapped miners. At the mine, Turkish Energy Minister Taner Yildiz says rescue efforts are being hampered by high levels of carbon monoxide, which has caused those efforts to be repeatedly suspended. Oxygen is continuing to be pumped into the mine, which is more than a kilometre deep. Most of the deaths are believed to have been caused by suffocation. One miner involved in the rescue efforts says there is little hope of finding any more survivors. Relatives have voiced anger over the lack of information. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul, Turkey.
A portrait of Pakistani education activist Malala Yousafzai has sold for more than $100,000 at auction. The teenager shot in the head by the Taliban while on her way to school in 2002. The proceeds from the sale will go to a fund for charity to be given to nonprofits focusing on education for women and girls in the wake of a kidnapping in Nigeria. And a newly discovered collection of 33 letters of former First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy to an Irish priest half a century ago are going to be offered at auction. I'm Marty Johnson, VOA News in Washington. There's more news at voanews.com.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 15th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. A Nigerian Christian group leader says Boko Haram financiers should be apprehended and prosecuted.
Muslim clerics in Nigeria, Muslim traditional rulers in Nigeria, and Muslim political leaders in Nigeria, these three groups must come together and discuss ways of moving this thing forward.
Pastor Ayo Aresi-Jafo is National President of the Christian Association of Nigeria. U.S. officials arrested former Charles Taylor Defense Minister. We'll talk with Thomas Wowoyu's lawyer. The U.N. says LRA leader Joseph Kony may be hiding in an enclave near Sudan. And South Sudan officials take stock as the country commemorates the 31st anniversary of the SPLM this Friday.
The question now is, how do we address these challenges? Not through picking up guns, but through sitting down and examining where we have not done enough.
And Ito is Acting Secretary General of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement. A judge orders Oscar Pistorius to undergo psychiatric evaluation, and more than 800 women lack maternity protection. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has rejected the freeing of Boko Haram prisoners in exchange for the release of more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped by Islamist group a month ago in northern Nigeria. Meanwhile, the national president of the Christian Association of Nigeria says the alleged conversion of the abducted schoolgirls into Islam is a direct assault on Christianity aimed at turning Nigeria into an Islamic state. Pastor Ayo Aresi-Jafo tells reporter Peter Clotty it is time to arrest and prosecute Boko Haram financiers.
We have said for a long time that the Boko Haram activities is definitely based on religion. And many have said, no, it's not religion. Now you can see for yourself. It's been the same story again and again. How can you forcibly and forcefully tell the world that these girls have been converted to Islam? It is totally unacceptable. It is obvious that there is a strong persecution against Christians in Nigeria, and we will never accept it. They are not Muslims. They are Christians. And we stand on it. We will always stand on it. It is important that the world should know this, and the world should speak the truth about what is happening.
Muslim groups, leaders around the world have condemned the action of the Boko Haram. Don't you think that is a strong indication enough about the world frowning on the activities?
Well, condemning Boko Haram is one thing, and it's good. But I think the situation has gone beyond condemnation. There has to be action backing condemnation. My point is this. A lot of these clerics must find ways to engage these people, to sit with them, to look for the clerics they believe in, so that they can start talking to them and by superior argument begin to find ways to change their mind from this kind of belief. You cannot Islamize Nigeria. And there are many other things that must be done. They must help us find those financing these people. They must stop the financing of these people. They must begin to expose those that are behind them, those that are working in collaboration with them. This thing has to come to an end. Muslim clerics in Nigeria, Muslim traditional rulers in Nigeria, and Muslim political leaders in Nigeria, these three groups must come together and discuss ways of moving this thing forward. It's very, very important.
There are suggestions that Boko Haram in itself has been targeting both Christians and non-Christians, as well as Muslims are being targeted by this group. Some of your members are saying that these school children were abducted because they were Christians. What evidence is there to back this claim?
When Boko Haram started, up till about a year ago, the people that they primarily targeted and are still targeting are Christians. It is churches that they were bombing. They go after two sets of Muslims. One, those who disagree with them, they go after them because they see them as infidels, like the way they see Christians as infidels. Number two, they go after Muslims that they believe are betraying them in the sense of giving information to security agents. So these are the Muslims they are going after. These are the mosques once in a while that they attack. And all this just happened in the last 1 year.
Pastor Ayo Orisijafo is the national president of the Christian Association of Nigeria. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. The immigration lawyer for the defense minister in Charles Taylor's former rebel National Patriotic Front of Liberia says his client will be exonerated of the charge of lying on his application for U.S. citizenship. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Federal Bureau of Investigation agents on Monday arrested Jokun T. Thomas Wowoyu and charged him with lying by failing to disclose his alleged affiliation with a violent political group in Liberia. But attorney Raymond Basso says Wowoyu later in 2009 submitted information clarifying his involvement with the NPFL. Basso tells me that contrary to reports, Wowoyu is not being charged as a war criminal.
In the indictment, it's claiming that he did not disclose his participation in the regime of Charles Taylor. And also there's a question on the naturalization application. Have you ever supported by force or violence the overthrow of any government? And he answered in the negative. They're alleging he answered in the negative.
So he did not say that he was a member of the Charles Taylor movement?
That's what they're alleging.
What do you think is likely to happen? As you said, this is an immigration case.
It's a federal criminal case based on their charge, which seems strange to me. They're charging him as basically lying to the government when filling out his application is what it amounts to. What do I think is going to happen? I think he's going to be exonerated simply because whether or not he made a misrepresentation or omitted something on his original application that he filled out pro se by himself in 2006. When I got involved in the case and the government asked us for information, we responded in writing and laid out all his participation and roles in the Taylor regime and other governments that existed in Liberia.
And so the government was given information recently?
No, the government was given information in 2009. After his interview for naturalization in the summer of 2009, they gave us what's known as a request for evidence. Anytime that you apply for something with the government on an application and you go in for an interview and it's deficient in any form, meaning you left something out, you didn't tell them everything or they weren't satisfied with something, they issue to you what's known as either an I-72 for your green card or an N-14 in the naturalization context, and they say, listen, some things are missing. Please provide us this information. They give you that opportunity. They gave Mr. Wowoyu that opportunity on July 15th, 2009. On August 14th, 2009, we responded in writing, and we laid out all of the information that they asked. So he may have originally made an omission or made a mistake in filling out the application, but that was corrected in writing when requested.
Would the government accept the correction?
The government did not accept the correction. They denied his case in 2010.
So you believe that if this goes to trial, that Mr. Wowoyu could be or would be exonerated?
Yes. They're not charging him as a war criminal. See, that's the misconception that I've been reading. I mean, basically, they're saying that the U.S. is holding him out to be a war criminal, which, in a sense, is true. They are holding him out to be that way, but they're only charging him as lying on an application. They're not charging him as a war criminal.
Raymond Basso is the immigration attorney for Jokun T. Thomas Wowoyu. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Philadelphia. We hope to bring you a response tomorrow from the U.S. attorney's office in Philadelphia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 15th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. A top official of the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM, says South Sudan has yet to achieve the dream for which the SPLM was formed. As Charlton Doki reports from Juba, SPLM officials held a news conference Wednesday ahead of tomorrow's commemoration marking the 31st anniversary of the SPLM.
As the country prepares to commemorate the 31st anniversary of the SPLM on Friday, the ruling party held a news conference to decry the violence that has left thousands dead and displaced more than a million South Sudanese from their homes in the last 5 months. Ann Ito is the SPLM's acting secretary general.
We still have security issues, and we are all aware of what is happening in Jonglei, Upper Nile, and unity. Even before that, the cattle rustling, the ethnic fights, yes, we have them.
Ito tried to outline her party's achievements since the signing of the CPA that led to South Sudan's independence, but admitted the government has done little to improve the economy.
We have managed our oil economy well, but we have not been able to diversify our economy so that agriculture plays a role, mining plays a role, services play a role. So we still have a lot more work to do in the area of the economy.
Asked why there are delays in payment of civil servants' salaries, Ito insisted that the government has had several financial obligations that did not leave enough money left over to pay government employees.
We have obligations to pay Khartoum what we agreed to pay as a financial settlement following the independence of South Sudan. We have obligations to pay loans that the government took from some companies who provided services. Now, when war comes, who does not know? Providing extra security means extra money.
She says due to the fighting, oil production was halted in some of the oil fields, leading to a reduction in oil production, and the revenues the government had been receiving were cut short. And Ito says, despite an end to the civil war that led to South Sudan's independence from Sudan, not much has been done to address the psychosocial effects of the conflict on South Sudanese. She says thousands of people traumatized by the last war have not received the necessary treatment. She called on citizens to work with the government to improve services.
The question now is, how do we address these challenges? Not through picking up guns, but through sitting down and examining where we have not done enough.
Ito says another big challenge is the nation's high rate of illiteracy, which she says makes it harder for the government to help people find gainful employment. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
A report from the UN Secretary General suggests that lowest resisting army LRA fugitive leader Joseph Kony may be hiding in a disputed enclave controlled by Sudan that borders the Central African Republic and South Sudan. VOA's Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations.
Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says in his report that the government of Sudan indicates that there are no LRA elements in the disputed Kafa Kinga enclave. However, he also reports that credible sources say Joseph Kony and some of his top commanders have recently returned to the area, seeking safe haven in Sudanese-controlled areas of the enclave. The Ugandan rebel leader and several of his senior commanders are wanted by the International Criminal Court for war crimes, including the use of child soldiers, and have been the subject of an intensive international manhunt. Mr. Bond's envoy in Central Africa, Abu Musa, told reporters that Kony is constantly on the move. He made the comments after briefing the UN Security Council Monday about a report on the work of the UN's Regional Office for Central Africa and areas affected by the LRA.
Kony may be in Kafia Kingi today. Tomorrow he will be in other parts of Central Africa or elsewhere. So he may have been sighted, but that doesn't mean he's permanent in those, because he knows eyes are after him. You know, we have troops who are tracking him on a daily basis.
Musa says the UN is working closely with the African Union-led regional task force on the LRA. Musa also met Monday with Sudan's UN ambassador, who he said reaffirmed that Khartoum is not harboring the rebel leader. It is not the first time that the group is believed to have sought sanctuary in Kafa Kinga. A report by the Enough Project and two other activist groups last year said satellite imagery showed the Ugandan rebel group hiding in the remote region periodically from 2009 until early 2013. In his report, the Secretary General says the LRA is believed to have split into several autonomous and mobile groups operating in the Central African Republic and Democratic Republic of Congo. The LRA continues to decline in strength, down to about 250 to 500 fighters. The UN says there have been no recent reports of mass atrocities by the group and notes a significant drop in the number of deaths and abductions so far this year. The number of civilians displaced by LRA activities is also down by over half from what it was at the end of 2013. But the Secretary General warns that fighting in the Central African Republic and South Sudan, as well as the expanding activities of Boko Haram into the area, could undermine progress. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
In yet another twist in the Oscar Pistorius murder trial, the judge has granted a request to have the athlete committed to a psychiatric facility for observation for up to 30 days. Viewer's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg. The move suspends Pistorius' trial for killing his girlfriend at his Pretoria home last year.
Both sides in Oscar Pistorius' murder trial have spent weeks poring over every detail of what happened on February 14, 2013. They've spent hours going over the placement of bullet holes in the locked bathroom door through which the runner fired four shots, killing his girlfriend, model Reba Steenkamp. They have reached back into his life story, the amputation of his legs shortly after birth, his ascendance to being the first double amputee to compete in the Olympics in 2012, and that same year, meeting the woman he fell in love with and then killed. But the main factor, both sides agree, is something no one can see: the inner workings of his mind. What Pistorius was thinking that night is the critical difference between guilt and innocence in this murder trial. Pistorius argues his disability makes him feel vulnerable and constantly fearful. He says it was that fear that drove him to fire blindly at the locked bathroom door, where he thought an intruder was hiding. He says he did not mean to shoot Reba Steenkamp. The prosecution argues he meant to kill. Earlier in the week, a witness for the defense, a psychiatrist, testified that the athlete's anxiety disorder may have played a role in his actions. That claim prompted the prosecutor, Harry Nell, to essentially ask for a second opinion. On Wednesday, Judge Tokozile Masipa agreed, essentially ordering the court to get deeper into his mind.
The question is whether there was a reasonable possibility that a referral of the accused for observation in terms of Section 79 of Act 51 of 1977 would reveal inter alia that at the time the crime was committed, the accused suffered from a mental disorder which could have resulted in his not being criminally responsible for his act. Having regard to the facts of this case, I'm persuaded that the requirement of a reasonable possibility has been met.
Masipa will release a more detailed ruling on Tuesday, which will include logistical details. The move will then delay the trial for at least 1 month. Law professor James Grant of the University of the Witwatersrand says the psychiatrist's claim of possible mental illness forces the court to further examine the claim. In the course of this trial, the runner has shown a range of extreme emotional reactions, sobbing and even vomiting into a bucket during graphic testimony. But Wednesday, he remained stoic. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
A new report by the International Labour Organization finds that large majority of women workers, at least 830 million, do not have adequate maternity protection and continue to face discrimination in the labour market. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the report in Geneva.
The International Labour Organization says progress is being made in maternity protection, yet motherhood remains a handicap for far too many women in the world of work. ILO Gender Equality and Diversity Branch Chief Shauna Olney says almost 80% of the 830 million women who lack maternity protection are in sub-Saharan Africa and Asia.
The report also shows that some groups of workers, often female-dominated, are excluded entirely from protection in law and practice. We look at self-employed women, migrant, domestic, agricultural, casual, and temporary workers, as well as Indigenous and tribal peoples.
The ILO has passed three conventions since 1919 that aim to protect pregnant and nursing mothers against health hazards at work, provide paid maternity leave, and protect women against discrimination and dismissal in relation to maternity. It says 66 out of 185 countries and territories have adopted at least one of these conventions. The report also sees a gradual shift towards maternity leave periods that meet or exceed the 14-week ILO standard. It finds only three countries in the world, the United States, Papua New Guinea, and Oman, do not provide mandatory payments during maternity leave, but provide the right to voluntary unpaid maternity leave. The ILO says the vast majority of countries explicitly prohibit discrimination during pregnancy and leave. Report author, ILO maternity protection and work family specialist Laura Adati tells VOA society loses when it does not provide maternity protection. Adati says working parents should have access to affordable childcare services so women can return to work productively once their maternity leave ends. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. A Confederation of African Football CAF inspection team is in Cameroon to assess the country's potential to host the 2019 and 2021 Orange Africa Cup of Nations. They are touring potential Nations Cup venues in the capital Yaoundé, Douala, Garoua, Bafoussam and Limbebue. The team has been in Guinea, Ivory Coast and Algeria. They'll also tour Zambia and the Democratic Republic of Congo before the end of July. CAF named the successful bid in September. Meanwhile, Liberia host Lesotho and Kenya welcome the Comoro Islands as the preliminaries in the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers start on Saturday. Madagascar play Uganda, Mauritania engage Equatorial Guinea, Namibia face Congo Brazzaville and Libya encounter Rwanda. Elsewhere, Mozambique tackle South Sudan, Sao Tome and Principe face Benin, Malawi challenge Chad, Central African Republic engage Guinea-Bissau, Burundi meet Botswana, Swaziland play Sierra Leone, and Tanzania encounter Zimbabwe. Finally, in athletics, South Africa's All-Africa Games 400-meter hurdles silver medalist Wenda Nell is delighted at improving her personal best from 53.16 seconds to 52.59 when she triumphed in the 400-meter flat at the recent South Africa Open Athletics Championships in Tlokwe.
Yes, I am very happy. It was the plan to try and break the 53-second barrier. The weather was quite good condition. It's a new track. Everything just was in my favor. So I went out hard and finished even harder.
The inevitable question is going to be, do you feel that this year you've set new goals again in terms of the 400 flat? We know that your hurdles, you've already made a new mark.
Yes, definitely. With the hurdles, I like to compare the two events with each other. If I can run a good 400, then I know I'm on track my hurdles. So that was my goal today, that just to run the hurdles. I wanted to try and break the 53-second barrier.
That was South Africa's Wenda Nell, the All-Africa Games 400-meter hurdles silver medalist, speaking in Tlokwe, Northwest Province, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, May 15th.
I wish to thank President Bill Clinton for telling the insurgents that the federal government cannot swap with Boko Haram and prisoners. It's for the girls. Covered by the Patrick Program, Home Blood Village, RSUP, Niger State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has rejected freeing Boko Haram prisoners in exchange for the release of more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped by the Islamist group a month ago in northern Nigeria. And that's it for this Thursday, May 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Button, Washington, saying, have a lovely day, Africa, but please stay tuned for International Edition next on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your peek. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.